The 100 Years' War, the De Guesclin period, the situation at Cognac and Saint-Sever in May-June of 1375. Unknown to the negotiators at Bruges, the provisions they had created were actually out of date. It was too late to stop the surrender of Cognac, and there's no evidence that the French government even tried. The Duke of Berry, whose appanage the city belonged, was already on his way there. The citadel was given up by its garrison on the appointed day, which was June the 1st, in accordance with their agreement. As for Saint-Sever, Catterton and his companions had entered into a conditional surrender agreement 5 days before the legates arrived. After 9 months of siege operations, they had reached the limits of their endurance. Physical exhaustion, empty storerooms, and relentless bombardment had all taken their toll. First of the great iron cannons ordered early in the year had been dragged into position in the ruins of the Abbey building on May the 4th and embedded in its prepared timber and earth position. It began firing immediately. Another of these monsters was sighted on Mont de la Place east of the fortress a few days later. They brought to about 8 the number of large artillery pieces and mechanical stone throwers that were around the fortress. The high walls of Saint-Sever had not been designed to withstand this battering. They began to suffer serious damage. According to reports subsequently made to the King of France, the walls, roofs, bridges, and gatehouses were all grandement démolés by the artillery, grandly destroyed. Thomas Catherton was nearly killed when a large cannonball came through the window of the tower in which he was sleeping. Almost as serious as the artillery damage was the progress being made by the French sappers, now that they could start their mines just an arrow shot from the walls. At about this time, they succeeded in undermining part of the curtain wall, bringing one of the towers crashing down over and opening a breach. Shortly after this incident, the garrison sent a herald into the French camp to tell the French king's officers they wanted to treat. Terms were finally agreed on May the 21st, 1375. Unless the fortress had been relieved by an English army by July the 2nd, the fortress would be surrendered in the following morning, July the 3rd. 8 prominent members of the garrison, including Sir Thomas Trivet, were to be delivered up as hostages to secure the punctual performance of this engagement. In the meantime, there would be a ceasefire around the fortress. More controversially, the agreement provided for large payments to be made to the defenders once they surrendered. The garrison was to receive 40,000 francs, that's about £6,700, which Jean de Vienne and the leading men of Normandy swore to pay by the faith we owe to God, to Our Lady, and to the profession of arms and to the bonds of honor and chivalry. In addition, 12,000 francs, about £2,000, was to be paid to Catherton personally. 2,000 francs, or about £330, to Trivet, and 1,000 francs, or £170, to Valbreton. The garrison was also be paid the ransom of some of its more prominent prisoners, which were said to be worth another 4,500 francs. Finally, they were to have a safe conduct home with transport laid on. Payments to the garrison for surrendering their fortress were not uncommon in the late Middle Ages. Payments to Catherton and his colleagues, however, was unusually large and naturally provoked accusations of collusion when they became known. Yet Catherton's accusers ignored the circumstances in which the agreement was made. The garrison knew nothing of the negotiation at Bruges. For them, what mattered was they had obtained a 6-week respite from the pressure of artillery bombardment and mining, and from constant threat of assault. They knew that John de Montfort and the Earl of Cambridge were in Brittany with an army twice the strength of Jean de Vienne's. They were fully expecting to be relieved before the date fixed for the surrender. One of Catherine's first acts after the agreement was made was to send a messenger to the two commanders informing them of the terms and calling on them to come to his aid. Of course, John de Montfort might ignore the appeal or march on Saint-Sever and fail beneath the walls, but in that case, the fortress was doomed anyway. As for the French, the agreement had obvious advantages in spite of its high cost and the progress that was being made on the ground. That which may be bought with money ought not be bought with men's blood. Charles V used to say to those who thought it shameful to trade places with the enemy. The composition of Catherton and his men preempted the negotiations at Bruges, and it could be expected to draw the English out of Brittany and force them to confront a French army on the grounds of his own choosing. Charles V's commanders were just as convinced as Catherton was that John de Montfort and the Earl of Cambridge would attack their siege lines at St. Savar. They were preparing for the fight. The first steps was to bring the constable's army north from the March of Gascony. The king ordered him to join John de Vienne in Normandy as soon as Cognac was in his hands. This would bring the strength of the French army at St. Savar to at least 4,000 men-at-arms. Three more large artillery pieces were ordered from the foundries of Caen, and no fewer than 29 small artillery pieces armed with lead shot. These last were infantry weapons, destined to reinforce the fixed position of the army against the relief force. What was probably envisioned was a double line of defenses around the fortress, one facing inward to contain a sortie by the garrison, and another facing outward towards the troops of the relieving army. The news of Catherton's agreement with Jean de Vienne reached Westminster and Bruges at about the same time on the last days of May. It caused consternation in both cities. The great question for the French government was whether to ratify the deal set out in the Legate's Award. If they did, they would lose the fruits of 9 months of expensive efforts at the moment when St. Savar was about to fall into their hands. If not, then there would probably be an attempt to relieve the place, which could only lead to a large-scale pitched battle between the English and the French armies in Normandy and end any prospect of peace. But if the French had a dilemma, the English had a worse one. At Westminster, the council's immediate reaction was to organize a relief force. Exact plans are not known, but they must have involved the use of the English army in Brittany. There's no other way in which a large enough force could be gotten to St. Savar in time. The council also proposed to send additional troops from England. On May the 31st, orders were given to organize a small expeditionary force to sail from Southampton by the middle of June. The requisitioning officers moved fast. At least 15 ships were requisitioned within a week, and more were being found. It was the best opportunity that the English had since 1369 to force a decisive battle on the enemies. Unfortunately for them, however, their leaders failed to rise to the opportunity. As they hesitated, the French were able to outmaneuver them. John of Gaunt's messengers appear to have arrived in England in the first days of June, bearing the text of the Legate's truce. It was apparent that to continue with the relief operation now would be tantamount to repudiating it. It would also be quite unnecessary if the truce was respected by the French, as John of Gaunt plainly assumed it would be. So the council reconsidered its decision. On June the 5th, 1375, its orders were revoked. The officers charged with finding men and ships were ordered to return immediately to Westminster because of the truce with France. But what if the French repudiated it? That question had already occurred to the papal legates. They left Bruges at the beginning of June and made for Paris, where they arrived unannounced on June the 6th and sought an immediate audience with the king. There they learned that their worst fears were about to be realized. Charles had no intentions of ratifying the Legate's terms. The siege of St. Savar would not be lifted. The Bastides would not be evacuated. The iron foundries of Caen and Saint-Lô continued to work day and night. On about June the 15th, 1375, the French king issued a general summons to all men-at-arms in the provinces of Languedoc to muster beneath the walls of St. Savar on July the 2nd. Now, the sources for this: The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.